And hello again, I'm Frieda Morrison, and welcome to Grow Radio. And like last time, I started here in my own garden, just enjoying the new buds of May. And of course, the chorus of birds, and the blackbirds especially, are having a rare time, feisting over their territory. Fit a stew-sheet there has been. And out in the far end of the garden, the beekeepers have been busy, just like the bees. And I was awful lucky to get some cut comb honey the other day. Oh boy, is that the best. So, like last time again, let's go into the greenhouse and see if it's happening in there. Here I go. Push and open the door. You can hear a blackbird enjoying themselves. Right, into the greenhouse we go. Wow, there's been a huge spurt on the salads in here, and I'm here my third salad in it, with the young rocket leaves mixed with the wild garlic, or the ramsons, as it's called in Scots sometimes. And I actually grow a lot of tam thooms, or nasturtiums, to cut the leaves into my salads. And of course, the tam thoom flowers are awful good in salads as well, and they make a bonny splash of colour. The Mayan gold, early tatties, come doing this with you a wee bit further down to the end of the greenhouse. The Mayan gold tatties are just looking amazing, and they're just about to come into flower by the looks of them. Strawberries were there in flower, and we've been joined with a few bumblebees in here as well. Well, I think the tomatoes are going to be great this year. They're just about 1.5 feet tall, strong looking plants. Carrots are looking fine. Sowed them at the right time, so far things are working, but and there's aye a bit in gardening. A cal nicht of plummeting temperatures, and we're peaked. Well, outside, looking outside again, the daffodils are just about over. But as I said, nothing else is coming into the bud and looking great. Leaves are on the bark, but need the beech yet. Mind the old saying, if the oak is out afore the ash, there's going to be a splash. If the ash is out afore the oak, there's going to be a soak. And we didn't want that. So watch your trees, and I'm watching the buds on my apple trees out there, hoping for a good season, we'll see. And we'll be speaking about apples in the programme later on, fan and fit to plant. And speak about watching, I'm watching the time. So come on with me now to join the garden gang, out in our virtual studios. And welcome to Grow Radio. Welcome to our virtual gardens and our very real gardeners. Let me introduce you to the team, really willing and able to sort out your gardens, whether big or small, pots, windy boxes, or nothing. And as I've said before, just enjoy the banter and the fresh air. And we've got suggestions, tea, for armchair gardeners. So the team, the head gardener himself, a past curator at the Botanic Gardens in Embra and chair of Scotland's Open Garden Scheme, welcome Dave Mitchell.
Ah, how are you doing, Frieda? What a grand day it is.
It's a beautiful day. And in Embra, our soon sorter, an African gardener, Richie Werner.
Aye, aye. It's a fine day here, no?
What a fine day. We're all fine. So, you're all having a fine time. Richie.
Aye.
Are you having a fine time with your family in your garden, relaxing by the shrubs, sipping the occasional pina colada, that sort of thing?
I'm having a bra time, and we're starting to see the bonny butterflies as well, so the girls are just loving that, chasing them about.
I have to tell Dave and Abdi that the last time I spoke to you, there was something going on. There was a stushy in the background with Izzy and Helena.
Story of my life. They're fighting over a beanbag.
And
bag,
they were fechting. And I just heard Richie saying, Izzy, that's nae you a sheep. Sheepers. So maybe it wasn't a pina colada type scene that I'm painting.
No, okay. But I could have a pina colada. I'll not say no.
Right, let me explain the format a wee bit. We have gardening questions on email, and a new thing, we have gardening questions recorded before on their phones and sent in to us, gathered by your technical wizard, Andrew Davidson. Now, I keep speaking about Andrew Davidson, but we keep losing him in the ether, so he is there. So, once you get the gist of this new format, we encourage you to record your questions and send them in to Andrew. For you never hear. But we think about him all the time, didn't we? We think about Andrew.
Aye. Without Andrew, we'd be nibdy.
That's it.
And although this is Scots Radio, but Grow Radio, you didn't have to be able to speak Scots. We can cope because we are marsupial. We have pooches for words. And on that note, let's get started. We start with an audio question. The first question is for Muriel Wilson about Potentilla.
I have an old Potentilla at the garden gate I would like to replace, and wondered if you could give me any suggestions of a low-growing scented shrub that would be nice as you come in the gate. Thank you.
Right, David. A scented shrub.
A scented shrub. Oh, there's a wheen of things you could use. The obvious things that jump to mind are lavenders, things like lavendula, hickcote, or munsted, or gross blue. But, you know, the Daphnes are nice. Daphne tangutica, Daphne blois, Jacqueline pastel, or maybe Skimmia japonica, the variety fragrance. Right. You know, I think that would be my choice. You know, there's a whole range of things, but if I had to choose one, I think I would choose Daphne tangutica.
It's a great scented shrub, that. Right, thanks to Muriel for that recording, and moving on to our email question. This is for Mike and Ilsa Yule for Dunblane in Perthshire about feeding pots of perennials. She said, our garden is quite small, and we have a large number of plants in containers, ranging from acers through to azalea bushes, roses, clematis, as well as annuals. For the perennials, should we be repotting annually or feeding the existing pot? And if the latter, what is the optimum way of feeding, David?
Well, I keep a lot of things similar to that in containers and pots here in my own garden, and I don't repot annually. I only repot things when they really need it. And so therefore, the question is about feeding. And you should never feed when plants are under stress. So that means don't feed when they're dry. And the sort of overall rule is, for foliage plants, you want a feed that's got a wee bit of extra nitrogen in it. And for flowering plants, you want a feed that's got extra phosphates, like tomato feed. Now, I also never feed in the heat of the day. I always go out after my dinner, I go out nuts when I feed. And I make sure that anything I'm feeding has been watered in the morning and it hasn't dried out. And that way you don't scorch the foliage with the feed in the sun. And another wee thing about feeding containers, you know, little and often. And I often think it's better to start off with half-strength feed early in the season for maybe the first two or three times. And then doing it fortnightly at that point, getting it up to weekly full strength, and then toning it off again after midsummer into the autumn.
Right, I got enough of our way here for feeding the tomatoes. I killed all my tomatoes here, feeding them, and I hadn't watered them first. They were dry, and I just put down the feed. Oh, a hell lot just shriveled.
What happens when you do that is a thing called exosmosis, where the nutrients come out of the plant into the higher concentration of fertilizer that's in the soil. So you should never feed anything when it's dry. You should always make sure it's well watered before you feed it.
Right. Okay, this is another audio question. This is for Laurie Robertson in Aberdeen. When to plant out? Laurie is a member of her neighbourhood garden.
I live in a city centre flat in Aberdeen, and I've recently sown lots of seeds. These include sweet peas, sunflowers, lettuce, carrots and mint. They have all germinated and are growing nicely. When are they ready to go outside?
Okay, David.
Well, you just really got to wait until the fear of frost's passed. I mean, the sweet peas would be, ideally, should be hardened off a wee bit. You could maybe do that under some horticultural fleece. The lettuce and things like that. Again, you know, your carrots and whatever, if you started them off, just putting them under fleece. But just make sure the threat of frost's gone. We're all in the comfort zone at the moment with this heat wave in late April, early May. You know, but Jack could come dancing about in a fortnight's time and nip the lugs of everything.
Oh, but listen, we had -3 the other night up here, and a heavy frost.
She's not really in too big a hurry at the moment, but she should be all right, you know, within about, I would say, 2 to 3 weeks.
Aye.
You know, but she may be trying to harden them off under a bit of fleece or under a cloche if she's got that in her allotment.
Aye. Now, another email question. This is for Carol Lovey Faberdeen about rhubarb. It says, I've just bought 2 rhubarb plants. They're very young plants and I haven't yet planted them out. Any tips so that they flourish? I'm looking forward to some rhubarb crumble. Aren't we all, Carol? Dave, any tips?
Well, lots of tips about rhubarb. Rhubarb's one of the things, I always think it's a comfort food. It doesn't matter whether you hear stalk stuck in sugar or whether it's crumble. It's comfort food. And it's comfort food that needs well fed. It likes a well-drained soil. in full sun. Although it will tolerate a wee bit of a shade, the plants should be put about a metre to a metre and a half apart, and you should dig in as much compost and leaf or farmyard manure or leaf mould as you can before you plant it. And then once it's settled in, make sure you didn't plant it too deep, but in the summer months after it's established, you should always give it a bit of a mulch. And for folk that haven't got it, the best varieties, I think, are Temperley Early, which is good for forcing, or Early Champagne or Pink Champagne, which are just grand for eating and making tarts and crumbles and things. It's a lovely thing. And the other wee tip, didn't cut the stalks, pull them. And mind, didn't eat the leaves, because the leaves are toxic.
Okay, pull the stalks, I didn't know. No, I'm enjoying having my seasonal rhubarb crumbles with rhubarb fresh for the garden. But we have a long history in Scotland with rhubarb, David, and it's all connected to the botanics in Edinburgh.
It's an awful complicated story, but it involves the Tsars of Russia and a man called Dr. James Munsey, who worked in Russia. And when he was there, he discovered the value of rhubarb in the treatment of what was then known as the flux or dysentery, something that had affected soldiers in the Hanoverian troops in particular after the Battle of Culloden. Now, Munsey smuggled rhubarb seed from St. Petersburg. And you know, the story is that he was so scared of his life after having done this that he slept with a loaded gun at his side for the rest of his life. But he gave the seeds when he came back to Scotland to a man called Sir Alexander Dick, who was president of the Royal College of Physicians, who grew some at Prestonfield House in Edinburgh. And he also gave the remainder of it to Dr. John Hope, who eventually grew over 3,000 plants in the Royal Botanic Garden when it was located on its site at Leith Walk. So, you know, there's a grand tailoring there about the medicinal benefits of rhubarb and its connection with the Royal College of Physicians in Edinburgh, the Royal Botanic Garden, the Tsars of Russia, and just looking after folk and curing folk.
And, of course, we've got the John Hope Gateway doing at the Botanics as well, you know.
John Hope is very much an unsung hero. You know, he was born in 1725. He died in 1786. He was a major figure in the Scottish Enlightenment. And he didn't produce an awful lot of written papers, Frieda, but he trained over 1,700 doctors in the course of his life, many of whom travelled overseas, some working for the East India Company, some going off to work in America, others forming prominent lives in the UK. And he's commemorated today in the new Royal Botanic Garden John Hope Gateway, which opened a number of years ago. He was a great believer in contact of Linnaeus and the Linnaeus's classification system. He really was a remarkable man that a lot more should be known about.
And we just didn't realise just the influence that John Hope has had. And, of course, he can trace it back. Okay, rhubarb may have played a part in that, but he, as you said, he was a remarkable man. But, you know, it's not just about crumble, is it?
Oh, no. I mean, if you've got rhubarb, you've got apples. And that brings you on about, well, there's another man, James Grieve, but we can speak about him later.
Mm-hmm. We'll get on. And that's another remarkable story, you know, James Grieve and the creation of his particular variety. Right. Back to the gardens again. Question email for Hamish Napier. Now, Hamish, by the way, is a composer of a Sig tune. And before I go any further, you can hear Mayor for Hamish speaking about his new album, Cad the Woods, on Scotch Radio. It's new on episode 68. And we can hear David Mitchell speaking about the woods as well on Scotch Radio. He's good. He's coming on as a broadcaster, I would say.
Okay. He's a good teacher.
Of course he knows. Right. Hamish says, I have sandy soil. Oh, no, he's up in Grant in the Spey, right? I have sandy soil. I have the space. I have the seeds. But how, when should I plant the carrots? I'm just going about the carrots this new. Should I start seedlings indoors and then plant them outdoors? We get frost as late as the end of May. Tell me about it, Hamish. Here in Granton, can you help? Right.
It's simple, Hamish. Prepare the ground well, mark your drills, water them, put the seed in, cover them over and put a bit of horticultural fleece on them. And I would be, where you are, I would maybe be thinking about that in the next week to 10 days. And then he'd be in a hurry about them germinating. You know, they can take a wee while. So you just didn't want to do it too early where you are, or they'll get frosted.
Right, email again. This is for Helene Rose and feeding windy boxes. Helene says, hi, Frieda. And the other question, fits best for feeding south-facing windy boxes, tomato feed or normal plant feed? And fan do I start feeding them?
Windy boxes are greedy. They're greedy for water and they're greedy for food. It's a guy wee space with a lot of stuff in it and you expect it to perform well. And you're back to that thing. If you're growing flowers in them, then you're better using a tomato food with a wee bit of extra potash, and you should feed them, I would have said, half-strength feed the first two or three times from April through to May, just depending what's in them and when you get them started, and then gear it up to weekly at full strength, and then tail it off again in August, depending on the season. And remember, never feed your windy boxes when they're dry, or you'll really damage the plants. And you're better doing it in the evening when the sun's no on the foliage, because it doesn't matter how careful you are, you're bound to splash it onto the foliage. And if that happens and the sun comes out, the flowers will get scorched.
Scorched, that's what's happening now, right? Audio question again. This is for Marion Davidson. We have a very different type of question about Escalonia.
I want some advice on how to kill an Escalonia. The past few years I've been hard pruning, but it looks progressively worse. I don't want to dig it out. It's probably impossible anyway, as I really want to keep all the gnarled trunks. I should add, it's 60 years old.
Oof. Not often you get that, eh?
It's not often you're asked to kill things, poor old fella. But really, the only way would be to do what you call ring barking, which is to find the main trunk and then cut the bark in a strip about 3 inches wide and remove the bark in that 3-inch strip right round the main trunk so that you're cutting away all the vascular tissue and it'll die.
Oh. Oh. Oh, Richie.
Oh, no. Oh, dear.
She's saying it's looking a bit rough now.
That's fair.
It'll look a lot rougher when it's dead, well. Unless she's going to pick climbers out of it.
Okay, point taken. I think we've got the message. And thanks to Marion for that. It's a gardening programme. They hear that. It's on about killing plants and trees now. We can just see
it. Stuff you ask me to answer.
Okay. Now we're into the darling buds of me. Nae casting clout yet. Mind the coat, then I cast a clout till my be out. And refers to the May flower, of course. Nae the month. But all the colours and the blossom. I was watching the honeybees and the green blossom in my wee body the other day, Dave. What a sight that was on the green trees. Does your heart go?
I think that spring's such a wonderful event. I mean, I talked to my grandmother when she was in her 80s and saying to her, what did she mind best about life? And we talked about technology and television and phones and all that, but the things that she remembered best and valued most were lambs in spring, The way the blossom comes and how it just comes every year.
I haven't seen the green trees as bonny as they are this year, and the apple blossom as well, of course.
Apple blossom here is full, green's full, but you can't feel it. I'm meeting an awful lot of folk when I'm out walking the dog at a distance and can just hear a blether. And everybody's saying about, they're all talking about nature in some way. If any geeds come out of this thing, we've kind of maybe reconnected with it a wee bit more. Mm-hmm.
You kind of, you've hit the nail on the head there. I'm finding the same. Folk are saying I'm kind of connecting when we're gardens. I'm beginning to watch the birds myself more often. I'm sitting out in the evening just taking time to watch the birds. It's amazing.
I was out with the dog yesterday for half an hour and I met a man and a woman and they were standing watching butterflies and the both of them said to me, it reminded them of being a bairn.
Oh.
And I just went away and I felt a lot better. Folk are seeing things differently.
Aye.
It's true, aye. As the world adapts to virtual life, we thought we'd catch up with fit with heaven, fit with Mechte, starting with some of our Scots names for plants. And we've mentioned a few in the programme already. Tam Thooms, do you hear me? Tam Thooms in my intro. And the nasturtiums, of course. And Ramsons, wild garlic.
Lovely. Oh.
And our bonny logo is the gowan, the daisy, as in Burns' poem, Pood the Gowan's Fine. Now, Dave, can you think of any more? Have you got any more Scots names?
Oh, Deal's Meal for Cow Parsley, and Sooky Shoe for Clover. Cratties, that's a good yin, Cratties for the bluebells, and Garden Berries for brambles. And
garden
then
berries.
Heg Beg for nettles, and Drumly Dots for brambles, and Gashkins for gooseberries. You notice a lot of this is to do with feeding your belly.
Mm-hmm.
We've noticed.
Aye, but I think I've got to say, it's got to be my favourite, because I used to get dealt off for it when I was wee, maybe. And it was ragwort, because my grandfather used to call it Stinking Wooly.
He's on a roll, Richie.
He's on a roll.
Stinking Wooly. All the trees, ashen for ash, birk for birch, borrel for elder. And then another one I like is Curl Doddy for the devil's bits. Devil's bits scabious. And raspberries, you can, they were called hindberries, because the deer like them.
Oh.
I didn't care that either. Right, I'm going to stop you there because we're going to hear from Rona Alcorn in a minute, Chief Executive of the SLD. Scottish Language Dictionaries is a publicly funded Scottish charity supported by the Scottish Government. Now, the dictionaries are the nation's resource for the Scots language, and it's freely available online. Rona Alcorn, as I said, is the SLD Chief Executive, and we asked Rona to give us some of her favourite Scots plant names for the dictionary.
Well, yes, it's always nice to have a wee project like this. The online dictionary is just so enormous that you jump in and then 3 weeks later you come out and you go, where did I start with all this? But there's a whole load of common names for various plants and flowers and weeds that have been collected by generations of Scots lexicographers from all over Scotland.
I know we can't go through the entire dictionary. Just
no.
Give us some of them.
Okay, so I particularly enjoyed some of the names for the foxglove. There's heaps of common names. A lot of them are round about the shape of the flowers, of course. So you get thimbles and fairy thimbles and witches' thimbles and granny's thimbles and ladies' thimbles. There's also witches' paps.
Oh dear.
And then maybe with reference to the medicinal qualities of the plant, you get bloody bells and dead men's bells. and again, for the shape of the plant, Mappy's Moos.
Oh, Mappy's Moos. Of course, Mappy being the word for rabbit.
Indeed.
So it's a rabbit moo.
A rabbit mouth. Also, Toad Mittens.
Toad Mittens. Oh. I love that.
And Doug's Lugs. And then the daisy, a plant we all are familiar with. A beautiful common term for the daisy in Shetland, the cockalooray.
Oh.
And it recognises the difference in Shetland between Depeiri cockalooray in contrast to the Muckle cockalooray, which is, of course, the oxeye daisy.
Of course, and of course, the gowan. Burns used the gowan in poems.
Indeed.
One of my favourites is Granny's Bonnets. It's a columbine. The columbine of the Granny's Bonnet. And then you've got Sticky Willies, of course.
Oh,
everybody knows about Sticky Willies.
Sticky Willies is a good favourite. Lots of common names for the goose grass, of course. Cleavers, bedstraw, goose grass, catchweed, robin run the hedge, bloody tongues. We, in the dictionaries, we obviously were interested in collecting words and their definitions, but one of the best ways to demonstrate the meaning of a word is to show it in context. So part of our work is trying to find good examples of the word in use that richly illustrate all the different senses of the word. So I was looking for a nice wee quote on Sticky Willy, and I came across this, Frieda. I thought I'd share it with you. So it's from a 1946 novel called Rum and Green Ginger, written by a certain R.G. Nuttall, and it's set in a fictional town of Forbye. So here's a wee bit. There was honeysuckle high at the top of the hedge. You remember, too, that the air sometimes carried from the clover fields under the chalk downs, from the white and rosy banks of hawthorns in May, and the evening scented beanfields of early summer, soft and sweet as her breath. Oh, Clem, I do so love you. The barley whispered as if this kissing was like a soughing breeze to set the heads asway. That's fine, because I've got my hair as hopelessly entangled as a sticky willy in your hair.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah, sticky willy in your hair. That is a classic, absolute classic. And there must be regional variations, though, Rona, is there?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, some words we find only in, well, Shetland, for instance, the cockaleary. But one of our great problems is trying to get a complete coverage of all the words, not just for plants and flowers, but, you know, the whole vocabulary of Scots. We can only pull together a snapshot, really. And we're very aware of the you know, the number of gaps that we have. We don't have good regional coverage, or is not as good as we would like.
So would you like folk to get in contact with you and saying, have you heard of this or this name?
Absolutely. What we'd like people to do is first to check whether we already know about it. And you can do that by checking our dictionary online. And we've given the web address, which I think will be available on your website. There'll be a link there to our dictionary. So first check, we might already know about it. But if you have a word that we don't know about, a plant name, please, yes, get in touch. You can contact us at words@dsl.ac.uk. And we'll include that on your webpage as well, Frieda. And let us know what the word is, what it means, what plant or flower it denotes, and crucially, where you come from.
I'm sure folks will be really interested to hear what you've come up with, and get involved in maybe supplying you with some mare names as well.
I'd be delighted if they would, Frieda. That's exactly how we keep the dictionary up to date.
Rona Auckland, Chief Executive at the Scots Dictionaries. And let me mention as well the new project the SLD just announced. Scotland's youngsters are being invited to give voice to supplying pronunciation guides for a new Scots school dictionary in a new Scots Voices campaign. Now, the dictionary, under development by Scottish Language Dictionaries, will be published as a smartphone app for Aberdeen aged 8 to 18, fast speaks, reads or writes Scots, or would like to speak Scots. Now, the app's designers are keen to incorporate young voices from across Scotland to maximise the dictionary's appeal to young learners. And they invite Scotland's youngsters to send their pronunciations to the team. Now, this is the important bit here as well. By the 29th of May. 29th of May, folks. For further information, visit dsl.account.uk/Scots Voices, dsl.ac.uk/Scots Voices, or words@dsl.ac.uk, words@dsl.ac.uk. Fantastic idea. Congratulations to you and your team, Rona. Now, you're listening to Grow Radio. This is Frieda Morrison. With me is Heid Gairdner, David Mitchell, and our soon sorter, Richie Werner.
Hey!
Back to the questions, audio question. Faisal Faye, this is Faye Garth McCain about raspberries.
I bought and planted raspberry canes, the ones which fruit on this year's canes, 4 red and 4 orange. I planted them in a raised bed in 2 rows. For the last 2 years, the orange canes fruited well, but there have been no flowers or fruit at all on the red ones. I should say that the red canes grew as tall and as strong as the orange ones. Could anyone give me some suggestions as to why the red ones didn't fruit?
Okay, back to you, David.
Well, it was an interesting question, Frieda, because the red raspberries in general, overall, fruit on two-year-old canes. That's why pruning to ensure a succession of canes is vital. So the cane comes up in year one and you leave it, and then that cane will fruit in the second year, and after fruiting you cut it off. And it's followed by another cane that's growing. Whereas the orange-coloured raspberries tend to flower every year. So I wonder if he's got himself into a cycle with these young canes just no having had time, because autumn amber always fruits on the first year. The other thing is a good feed of sulphate of potash in the early part of the year would probably help.
Right. That's a good question. I never thought about that again. Right, thank you, Figard, for that question. That's fascinating. I didn't realise. I've got raspberry canes, but I didn't realise the cycle there. Okay, email question. This is for Isabel Duquet for Banff regarding Fantaplant oot seeds. Again, we kind of touched on this. I was getting parsley and viola seeds and with a wee kit for my birthday at the Hinnerina March. I planted them into the wee eggy boxes, a thing that came with them. The parsley is about 2-3 centimetres now, and the viola about a centimetre. I've thrown away the instructions, but fond of a plant them on.
Well, Finchie needs to do is give them a wee drink and then carefully pot them up into kind of maybe 3-inch pots or 2.5-inch pots just to get them garnered. She could have a slightly bigger pot for the parsley and put 2 or 3 plants in a big pot. And then water it in when you've pricked them out. And put a bit of newspaper over it just to shade it, especially if it's sunny. And then just let them grow on and they fill that pot, kind of harden them off a wee bit in a cooler spot, and then plant them out when the fear of frost is gone.
Simple as that. Simple as that. Now, David, I mentioned earlier that we'd be speaking about apples in this programme. No, we can, we're past planting bare root apple plants, but are we still in time to plant potted apples? I'll leave the story to you.
Well, you can plant apples in containers throughout the whole of the summer, but I always think with apples there's a bit of a mantra. Right root, right variety, right place, right time. And you'll get the right crop if you have patience and you prepare properly. So what you should be doing now is researching what kind of rootstock you want. If you're going to grow normal size trees, you want Mullen Merton 106. Or if you're going to put them against a wall, probably Mullen Merton 26. So getting the right rootstock's important. So doing your research now, working out what variety you're going to grow and what you want to grow, because different varieties do better in different parts of Scotland, east, west. There's numerous books. We spoke about Don Book, Fruit and Veg by Kenneth Cox in the last programme, and Rosie Saunders' book, the RHS Apple book, beautifully illustrated, has just been republished, and they're a great source of information. So taking time to work out what variety is very important, and of course you could now, if you know where you're going to plant them, you could prepare the ground. And I often think bare-rooted stock is by far the best, so you want to prepare a good tree pit, about a metre in diameter, 30 centimetres deep, with a good fork base, and put some well-rotted compost in the bottom. And it sounds daft, but having done all that work, fill the hole in and leave it to settle over the summer. And then you'll be ordering your bare-rooted stock, and it'll come in the autumn, usually probably about November. And then sometime between November and, you know, the spring, you can get it planted and make sure you plant it at the right level. Just don't put it in too deep. Make sure that you keep the graft union above the soil level. That's very important. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you're in a rush, you can go out and dig a hole and prepare it and do all that now and go to the garden centre and get yourself a variety in a container and plant it. But me, I tend to be inclined to wait on bare-rooted stock. Mm-hmm. And use this time to prepare.
David, I was lucky enough to see an apple display put on in Edinburgh a wee while ago. Most of the apples supplied by the all-time gardening guru and apple expert, Willie Duncan, my mentor for many years. So I'll put up a few of the photos I took on that day, and it's fascinating with the apples and their names and their individual dates. It was a great display. And I've seen many of them. And Dean by Willie Duncan, as you have as well, Dave, I would imagine.
Oh, Willie is such a national treasure. He's just a grand man with fantastic lifetime's knowledge and a generous spirit to share it with everybody, which is a remarkable thing. These displays that you saw are so important at getting people interested in understanding the many, many different varieties that there are. Because you can, there's about 2,000 different kinds of apple. That's an awful lot of knowledge.
An awful lot of knowledge. But the photographs I took were good, so I'll put them up on our website and our Facebook page and Grow Radio. Right, what kind of varieties would you recommend?
Well, I think a lot depends on where you live. It's very difficult to recommend. That's why folk have got to research. But if I wanted a cooking apple, I mean, you can choose Bramleys, but it's complicated with needing partners and what have you for pollination. So I would probably, if I had to choose a cooker, I would go for Howgate Wonder. Big red yellow fruit, ripens late, cooks and bakes well. It can be a wee bit prone to scab, but it's good. And I like Galloway Pippin. It's kind of freckled, yellowy, red fruit, has a good flavour. Some years you can even eat it off the tree, and it's good on walls, you know. Mm-hmm. Other folk like Grenadier, you know, makes a grand puree, but it doesn't keep very well. You know, the choice is yours.
Fit about eaters, though. Go on to eaters for us, because a lot of us just want to eat them.
Eating apples, well, again, Discovery's the one that is probably the widest grown in Scotland. It's a grand plant. Katie, another one that's...
I've got Katie, aye.
Katie originally came from Sweden, and it keeps well. It has a nice strawberry kind of taste about it, a wee bitty. And it's used a lot for making juice. James Grieve is a grand pollinator. It does better in the east than the west. It's kind of prone to canker in the west. Be careful when you pick it, because it bruises easily, but you can also stew it as well. Egremont Russell, it's a wee bit prone to scab, but I like it. Big green fruit, it keeps well, it's tasty. Cambus Nethin Pippin, red greenian, a wee bit good for keeping scab off. You know, the taste is yours. The only thing I would say, avoid Cox's Orange Pippin. It just doesn't do in Scotland. You want something like Ribston Pippin or Sunset. They do much better in our climate. Willie Duncan and others talk about Lord Rosebery and Egremont Russell. The thing is, go to any of these apple days when we get back up and running. You can see what's there. Talk to people. Find out what does best in your area.
Can I ask a question in there before we go? We'll leave the doers for another time. Let me ask a question. If folk were wanting to do some research, far would you direct them into, say, in the folk that can use the internet?
You know, there are good companies in Scotland. Scott Plants Direct have a nice website.
Aye, I looked at that.
John Hancock's Scottish Heritage Fruit Trees, he has a grand website with a lot of information on it. And, you know, there is the books I mentioned, Fruit and Veg, Kenneth Cox's book, excellent for helping you to choose fruit, and Rosie Saunders, the RHS Apple book's just been republished, and for the real specialist, the new book of apples by John Morgan and Alison Richards.
Oh, you know, it's a good one.
There's plenty of stuff out there to sit in your armchair and read a book or Google the RHS Fruit Garden Displayed. It's an old book, but it's still very, very, very helpful. The Dr. Hessian books.
Hessian's goodies.
You know, there's plenty of stuff about there. Taking time to get the right variety for the right place, preparing properly, planting at the right time, and you'll get the right crop. Fruit's an investment. Planting apples is an investment. Don't be in a hurry, you know, and if you're prone to damage for deer, you will have to use tree guards.
Thanks, David. That's most helpful. And I congratulate you on your attention to detail. It's fantastic to hear all this. Now, I just should remind folk that you need things to pollinate as well. So I mentioned a book last time we were on, speaking about pollinators, etc. Bee Garden by Maureen Little is what I would recommend. How to Create or Adapt a Garden to Attract and Nurture Bees. And it's published by Spring Hill, price £16.99. And you can look it up, and the email is info@howtobooks.co.uk. I really, really like this book. I think we've got time for Amir question. And this one is Faye, I'm looking for, say Helen Fitch, up at Lambride near Elgin. She's got trouble with germination. We're back to carrots and parsnips and beetroot again. Nothing coming through, Dave. She doesn't want to water the lines very much, but you need to do something. Which can she do?
Well, it's queer, Frida. I've heard a bit about this year from various folk in different parts of the country. With carrots no germinating, parsnips nae coming up, beetroot. And I'm wondering maybe if it's just been a wee bit too warm. You know, and you need to remember, some of these seeds can take 3 weeks to germinate. So if they've no come through within 21 days of sowing them, I would say you really want to re-sow as soon as possible with good fresh seed. But it's funny, I've had a few folk mention this to me. It's maybe just been too hot.
It's been too hot. You see, I sowed my carrots before the hot spell, and they're doing fine. It's a question. I'm okay. My carrots are okay. So anyway, I think we've got time for... I'm going to squeeze in another in. And this is for Diane Anderson. It's a very simple, quick fire in. It's a planted blue forget-me-nots, and they've come up pink. Fit why?
Well, you've got to remember, forget-me-nots are in the same family as borage. And a lot of these boraginaceous things, they're blue-flowered, but then the flowers eventually go pale. They can go through pink into white. But I have seen this with forget-me-nots, where there's been patches in the garden. You maybe get a wee genetic mutation. So what's blue becomes pink, becomes white, and sometimes you see clumps all mixed up together. It's just a particular gene that triggers the colour. But it is natural for them to change colour as well. You know, it'd be interesting to see what happens when they've been there 2 or 3 years. Does she get alternating colours, or do they revert back to being blue, or sometimes you get clumps with all three colours in it. It's just, you know, life's mysteries. And I often think our gardens are full of mystery. And that's what gives them a sense of wonder.
My garden's certainly full of mystery.
Me too.
But is that not what gives gardening a sense of wonder? You're right learning, you're right seeing things. And if you look closely, you learn something different.
I tell you, if it else, it's full at the moment. It's full of rabbits as well. I've got somewhere in my fence, the rabbits have found a hole and they're coming in, so I've got to deal with that. And that, on that note, ladies and gentlemen, brings us to the end of this, our virtual garden programme, Grow Radio. It's www.growradio.com, www.growradio.com. And our mothership, Scotch Radio, is www.scotchradio.com. Now, can I invite you new to get in contact with us? Either via email, iPhone, we are getting questions. We would awful like to hear from you. Name it out if you've just started. We've all been there. I haven't heard much for you, Richie, this time. We haven't given you a chance to come
here.
In. Who's your garden, Dean?
It's all right. It's no bother at all. I've got some interesting things coming up. So my bluebells are up, which is awfully bonny. And I've got an interesting wee Mechanopsis poppy, which is orange, which I've never seen before. So I don't know where that's comfy. But it's awfully bonny.
You get variations in colour in the Welsh poppy, Mechanopsis
cambrae. Oh, interesting. I've had yellow ones for years. This is the first time it's turned orange.
It's like what we were talking about, genetic mutation. You get oranges. I like that Mechanopsis cambrae. Some folk think it's an awful weed, but I think it's a bonny thing.
I like it. Aye.
Right. I hope you've enjoyed your dinner doing the garden again. And it's dinner put off. Get in touch. We're half a fine folk, you know.
Oh,
here's the email address to send your emails and your phone recordings. Email info@growradio.com, info@growradio.com. So, on behalf of the team, Dave Mitchell, Andrew Davidson, Richie Werner, Bruce Murray, got to mention Bruce as well,
right,
and myself, are you ready? Enjoy your garden. Bye.
Bye.